Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Boston Balling. I'm your host, Gabby Hurlbut. It's Tuesday, so we're not that far into the week yet, but hope everyone is having a good start to their week. Weather is gorgeous again, so hope people had a great weekend. I had a really good weekend. My sister graduated from college, actually, so shout out to her for that. Hope everyone's doing well. Happy to bring you guys another episode of the show today. Excited to introduce my guest that I have with me on this episode. He is a play-by-play broadcaster for the Providence Bruins. I actually had his dad on my show as well. For all of you who remember, Austin Rook, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Gabby. How are you?
Good. I appreciate you hopping on here with me.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks for coming on. Definitely good time to be a sports fan. There's a lot going on right now. Just a lot to talk about. But first, before we kind of get into all of that, could you just talk a little bit about you, kind of your background and how you got involved in the industry?
Yeah, so obviously you had my dad on. I remember shadowing him at games from back when I was about 7, 8, 9 years old. But once I got sort of into high school and college age is when I sort of knew for sure that I wanted to get into this field. So I went to Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and studied digital media and broadcasting there, and started out broadcasting everything I could. So from right when I was a freshman, I remember my second week of school, I broadcast a Marquette versus TCU volleyball game. I did men's and women's basketball. I did soccer. I did women's volleyball, as I mentioned. I could anything that I could get my hands on, I did. And I eventually moved back home here in 2018 and became the voice of the Bruins in 19. So sort of fell into place that way. The job definitely found me.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I feel like there's nothing more rewarding than being able to do something you love on a day-to-day basis as your job, you
Yeah,
know?
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a blast. I it's certainly a blessing, and I'm going into now year number four this coming fall. So,
Yeah. Congratulations.
thank you. No, it's great. It's great there to be able to go into my home arena every day and call a game is something that I'll never take for granted. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, for sure. That definitely must be super fun and super rewarding. What would you say your favorite part of the job is?
The favorite part of the job is being able to be my true self in the moment. To be honest, there have been some calls that I look back on where I go more nuts than others, but I just sort of get lost in the moment, and I think that that's really like what I look back on as being the most fun part of the job is just getting absolutely lost in the moment and being passionate, and that coming out for especially for fans to listen to is I think that they deserve someone that's super passionate about their team. So that's what I try to be, and sometimes that might not it might be considered a little homerish or whatever, but you know what? It is what it is.
Well, no, that's a good thing though, because if you think about it, when you're sitting at home watching a game, you react to things in the moment like that as a fan, I feel like. And so people like when somebody is reacting the same way they are, that's, commentating the game. So for you, it's like, yeah, I'm doing this for all these people, but this is how I actually would react if I was just watching this game, like from my couch.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. That's what I try to do, and the Bruins fans like it, so I'm gonna keep doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And hockey is a great sport too. Was hockey always something that you felt like you wanted to pursue, or was that something that you kind of just fell into?
Honestly, it was something that I just fell into. I never played the sport, and honestly, if you put me in a pair of skates and threw me on the ice, I would probably be just as effective skating on ice as like if you put a dog out there on ice. I never played the sport. My brother played it back in the day, but I was always a Bruins fan growing up, but I truthfully didn't really grow and into loving hockey as much as I do now until I got to college. And we didn't have a team at Marquette, but I was being in the upper Midwest, you're around a lot of great high school and other college hockey. And I was around a lot of kids at school who were into hockey much more so than here. So I would love to watch games with them and sort of pick their brains. And I became more of a passionate fan than the casual fan that I was before I went to school. So now I'm watching every game every night and I can't get enough of it. And I've watched every playoff game I could so far this year. As long as it's not going till like 1:32 in the morning, like some of those West Coast games do. I watch as much as I can. I just try to consume as much as I can. And I like to try to watch some of the broadcasters, especially the national guys. That's what I aspire to be. So I'm going to watch as much of them as I can.
Yeah. And that's a great way to kind of learn and work on your craft too, is by listening to people like that who do it at that level. Cause you can be like, oh, this is something I can do better, you know, when I'm calling a game, to just kind of work your way up to that. So the more that you listen to those types of people and watch those games, I feel like the more you can just learn from them.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the goal.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's super cool. And I mean, that's funny you mentioned, yeah, those West Coast games, like those Kings games that were starting at like 10 or 10:30 at night. And it's like, oh, this is not going to end until like one. And then if they go to overtime, then it's like, oh gosh, then you're really talking like 2 a.m.
Yeah, and then you got to wake up early, 7:30 or 8. You're like, well, there goes my sleep for the night. But it's
worth it. Yep, exactly. But again, I've talked to so many people about this too. There's really nothing like playoff hockey. It's such an intense vibe, and there's just so much that goes into all of those games, and just the intensity is just so much, higher than the regular season, and just the pace at which they play. It's just, there's nothing like it, really.
Yeah, no, there's nothing like it at all. It's so much different than regular season hockey because one mistake can change your fortunes for the entire season. You look at game 7 between Calgary and Dallas, that one going to overtime, Jake Oettinger standing on his head the way he did with over 60 saves, and then finally it ends on a shot from Johnny Gaudreau almost in the corner that snuck past him when he lost focus for a split second. And if anyone was ever going to win the Conn Smythe Award that got eliminated in the first round, it would be Jake Oettinger, because that was incredible performance that entire series. But the way that a game can just turn on its head in an instant is what captivates everyone that watches the Stanley Cup playoffs, because it's such a fast-paced game, and like you mentioned, it's a completely different sport than the one that exists in the 82 game regular season, or 76, 72 in the AHL, which is what I broadcast. So playoff hockey is just a completely different beast. And I'll die on this hill. It's the most exciting playoff to watch, whether you're talking about NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA playoffs, which are going on right now, whatever you want to talk about. It's the most fast-paced game. It's low scoring. It's generally very close. The goaltender, every team that's in that playoff is great. Generally speaking, look at the East playoffs. They're all over 100 points, all those teams in the playoffs. So every team is good, at least 95 points in the playoffs, and you're not getting any, like the NBA gets some under 500 teams in the playoffs. You've seen it in the NFL in the past. Everyone is fighting for that trophy rather than just being happy to be there. And I think that passion shows when they play. You look at a team like Washington that pushed Florida to 6 games. And they were the second wild card in the East, still had over 100 points, but they're a great team in their own right. So there's just nothing like the Stanley Cup playoffs. And we've seen it so far this year, where every game has sort of just been that pins and needles game, especially here in the second round, with the exception of the Florida-Tampa series that just ended. But then, they had some good games in that series, and Florida wasn't able to pull any of them out. But even so, like every game just sort of captivates you in that way.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, especially even just the fact that playoff hockey is significantly different from the regular season. You never know how teams are going to come out in the playoffs. I mean, you look at teams like Tampa. They obviously won the Stanley Cup the last 2 years. They're looking to three-peat right now. During the regular season, they really didn't look like the team that had won the Stanley Cup the last 2 years. I mean, they were still good, but they weren't like the team that they're playing like right now in the postseason. And that's why I said to a lot of people, yes, Tampa during the regular season, they were good, but do people really want to face them when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs? Because they have the experience, and this is that team that won the Stanley Cup the last 2 years. And look at what they're doing right now. Like, sure enough, they flipped that switch and now they're in playoff lightning mode, and they're looking like that team that potentially could do it again.
Yeah, I mean, it also helps that they have the best goalie on the planet, and
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
probably, I mean, I would say at least probably a top five goalie all time right now in Vasilevskiy. So that certainly helps their case. But
He's
no,
awesome.
you talk about them in the regular season, and they were a good team. They battled their injuries and ineffectiveness over the course of the year, and ended up finishing third in the East. And like, as a Bruins fan, I wouldn't want to face them. I mean,
Could
Toronto
you
took them
imagine
to the
how that would
brink,
have
and I think,
gone? Not
yeah, no, I mean, Toronto took them to the brink, and everybody in Toronto land wants change, and I think they need to pump the brakes a little bit on that, because you guys had over 110 points. You finished second in the East. You lost in 7 games to the two-time defending Cup champions. Yeah, so I you can
Toronto's gonna
stop
Toronto,
all the yeah no
regardless.
I you can stop all the fire this guy and that guy talk. Like, you had your best season in quite a while, still didn't result in a playoff win, but you're
No, they looked really, really good this year
yeah
overall.
absolutely. So Tampa's just really interesting to me, because their goal, a lot of the stuff that I heard over the course of the regular season was they're just readying themselves for the playoffs to make that push. And at times during the regular season, they looked burnt out, and I think people were probably mistaking that for just conserving their energy so they could go for it again, go for the three-peat when it got to the playoffs. And then I think you saw in this Florida series, after they got over the Toronto hump, that yeah, they're rested and ready. They didn't have Braden Point in that entire series, their number one center, and they just blitzed their cross state rival. So
Yeah, I mean, really,
if
that
I'm
was, I
Carolina,
didn't expect that. I honestly,
I didn't either.
Tampa Bay, it's hard to bet against them when it comes to the postseason, obviously, at this point, based on recent history. But I really thought that Florida was going to make that a closer series. I thought that they were going to at least be able to take a couple games from that series. I thought that they were going to, I'm not saying necessarily push that to 7 games, but I thought it would go at least 5 or 6. Like,
Yeah.
I really thought that Florida was going to at least pull out one or two of those games. I did not expect that to be a sweep.
Yeah, I didn't either. I thought maybe 6 games, maybe even seven, but when you look at it, really the difference is the goaltending. Bobrovsky wasn't
Oh,
good
yeah,
enough. Vasilevskiy
absolutely.
stood on his head, and that's ultimately what the difference was. You look at some of those games in the series, they were very low scoring games. And the stat that I remember sticking out most to me was, before the series, Tampa was plus money at +135, and I'm like, if I'm a betting man, and I'm not, but if I'm a betting man and I'm looking at Tampa, the two-time defending Cup champion, and plus money, I'm like, I'm gonna take that any
Taking
day of
it.
the week.
Yeah, that's a safe bet to take, I feel like.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And that's why it's, I really feel like with that series, Tampa 100% set the tone of that series in game one. That was they had a that was a pretty dominant win they had in game one, and I feel like that just really set the tone and the energy for the rest of the series. And again, still, even after that, I thought that Florida was going to make it a closer series than that, even despite what happened in game one. But I really think that when Tampa came out in game one of that series, that's really when I was like, okay, this is the team that we all expected to come out at the beginning of the playoffs. And I mean, props to Toronto for making that a close series. I really was, you know, I was kind of hoping that maybe Toronto pulls that out only for the sake of eliminating the team that just lost the last 2 years, because I am kind of biased towards that. But, you know, I honestly thought that Toronto really had a legitimate chance to close out that series. And again, then they did. And that was a competitive series. But then when I saw the Lightning play game one against the Panthers, that's when I was like, okay, that's the team that we all have really been looking for, that we didn't really see much at all this season at all until this specific point. But this is when they need it, is right now. And this is the time when that team knows how to get things done.
Yeah. You know? And Toronto had a chance to end it in game six. And when Tampa won that game in overtime, you're like, okay, same old Leafs, you know, and here we go again. And sure enough, Tampa pulls it off in game seven as well. But they only won 2-0 in that game. So, but yeah, the Florida thing shocks me. The one goal on the power play in the playoffs thing is ridiculous. It's like 2011 Bruins power play when they won the cup.
Yeah, don't even.
So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah,
like,
Florida just, it's the President's Trophy curse, man. President's Trophy. Bruins have done it a couple of times, and they've bowed out in the playoffs in the first or the second round. So I don't know what it is, but in the end, they really just didn't have the horses show up when they needed them to. Alexander Barkov had a terrible playoffs. He only had one goal. Showed up for one game of the Washington series, the last one, and he didn't really do much at all against Tampa.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, but
yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. That guy was
he was pretty almost non-existent, which is weird.
Yeah, that one, I mean, it's those three things. It's the ineffectiveness of Barkov, it's the power play that was garbage, and it was the inconsistent. I mean, Bobrovsky was good in the playoffs. He wasn't, no one's going to be Vasilevsky level, but like at times he was a hindrance to them. So it's those three things: the power play, Bobrovsky's ineffectiveness at times, and Barkov not showing up. You look at a guy like Anthony Duclair, who came to play every night, but like, I had Florida going to the cup, so I guess
a lot of people did. A lot of people did, and that was an idea I definitely was starting to get behind too, as we approached the end of this season and just how dominant and good they were this entire season. I was like, this looks like a team that probably could go all the way.
Yeah. And now for them, it's all about how you bounce back. You look at a team like Tampa that got swept in 19 and then comes back and gets to the Eastern Conference Finals at least the next 3 years, winning two cups in the process. How do you bounce back? You look at your cross-state neighbor and you're like, it's been done before. We can come back from getting swept in a series where we felt like we could have granted Tampa got swept by Columbus, and it's a little bit of a different example, but you can compare the two in the sense that it's been done before where you can come back like that after a devastating series sweep where you felt like you were maybe the better team. So I'm interested to see how they come out of the gates next year. They're going to bring most everyone back. I'm not sure what happens with Claude Giroux, but everyone else for the most part is back. So you run it back and you try to do some of the same things that Tampa did in 2020. They brought most everybody back. I mean, they had that line of Gaudreau and Yanni Gourde. And, I'm forgetting who the third guy was. I don't know if it was Palat. I don't think so, but they came back and won it all twice in a row. So if you're Florida, you look at something like that and you're like, it's been done. Why not go for it? Pick up a couple. They don't have any draft capital, so you come back in the summer and you retool and you try to watch film and figure out what went wrong and improve these areas, and you try to run it back and see what you can do going forward. I won't be worried about them going as sort of like a hangover, if you will, until maybe the new year, maybe January, February. Like if they're sort of middle of the pack, then I'm like, what's up? But I expect Florida to be right back where they were
Oh,
last
me
year.
too. Yeah, that's what I think too. I think they're going to be next year just as good as they were this year, and I think they legitimately have a shot again next year to go all the way. And like we're having this conversation now, like you said, if we're looking like, midway through the season maybe, and they're not performing as well as we think they're going to perform right now, then it's like, okay, yeah, then maybe they, maybe there is a bit of a hangover there. Maybe they're not really sure what their direction is or how far they can really take this thing. What can they do? Can they pull it together like they did this year, but perform better in the postseason? We won't really know that right now, obviously, but I completely agree with you. I actually think that that's a team that is going to be a threat again next year. I think now, we've seen what they can do this season, and we see kind of how that team is built, and I think that they have the capability next year of being able to do it as much as obviously this last series didn't go well for them. I think that they will bounce back from that, and I think that they're going to be one of my early favorites going into next season, I will say.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree. They have to be up there. I mean,
Yeah,
they proved
they're
it
too
over the
good
course
not
of
to
it.
be, I feel like.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's interesting to me. Like, I wonder what's going to happen with Giroux, and then who do you put on that line? But you can probably go out and grab a free agent that's out there as well. So, I mean, who wouldn't want to play hockey down in Miami?
Yeah,
So,
right.
I
Exactly.
wonder how they get the ice as good as they do down there. But anyway, but. Where it's 80,
So
where it's
true.
80 degrees year round, but
So
no,
true.
Florida's going to be right back there. 100, absolutely.
No, I'm definitely with you on that. And I mean, this playoffs in general definitely has been interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, how it played out so far. I mean, you have the Rangers who came back from down 3-1, which they had done in the past. So people were like, maybe they can do it again. And they did. That was crazy. I mean, that whole series, there were so many chances for Pittsburgh to close out that series and they just couldn't do it. So that in itself was interesting to me. But I'm looking at, obviously Tampa gets the winner of this series here between Carolina and the Rangers. I'm looking at this as I think the Canes would give them a much more competitive series. This is not anything to really
I'm
nab
not so sure about that.
on the Rangers per se, but I really think that their lack of experience compared to the experience that the Lightning have is going to be really, really tough for them. Obviously, the biggest glaring weakness right now with the Canes is that they can't win on the road. I mean,
Yeah.
they've lost every game on the road they've played in the playoffs so far this year. However, the Hurricanes are actually a team that I think if they can figure out how to win on the road, it has the potential to win the whole thing. And I'm looking at it as I think that Tampa, they struggled against the Rangers in the regular season this year. They could not beat them in the regular season this year, but this Tampa team, like we talked about before, is a lot different in the postseason than they were in the regular season. So I think that, whoever they play in the next series, obviously it's still too soon to say because the Rangers got that key win at home in game three. But I just the Rangers to me still are just young and inexperienced, and I think that that's gonna come back at some point in this playoffs.
Yeah. The only reason why I think that the Rangers might give Tampa a little bit of a battle, like you said, they competed very well against them during the course of the regular season. But the key for me, as is the key for most teams in the playoffs, is their goaltender. And
Of course,
I'll tell you this. I've called AHL games for 3 years now, and I have not seen a goaltender come across my eyes as good as Igor Shesterkin. That
he is
guy
great. He is
who
really good.
played for Hartford in 2019-20 before we shut down in March was I can't he looked like the second coming of Patrick Waugh. Like this guy was just ridiculous on an AHL level, and he's starting and people in the NHL are starting to see that now where this guy is outstanding in between the pipes, and he's had a couple hiccups over the course of the postseason, but he is every bit as good as Vasilevsky when he's on. And if he is on, the Rangers are very much on par with Tampa in terms of skill. So that's going to be a really good series to watch. But if Shesterkin is off in any way, I'm that's not sure that the Rangers defense can keep up. That's the key.
That's the problem I'm also thinking with them, though, too, 100%. Because it's a big if situation there with him. You know, it's for that team. I'm looking at it as, yeah, they'd be going and facing a team that's, you know, pros at this point. They know how this works. They've been here. They just won the Stanley Cup twice in a row. Any day that he is not on, Tampa will take advantage of that, and that could be huge in terms of the momentum, because I feel like once Tampa is on a roll, it's really, really hard to kill that. And that's why I'm looking at it as, yes, during the regular season, Tampa and the Rangers, I mean, New York was tough for them in the regular season, yes. But again, Tampa in the regular season was just not the same, and I'm having a hard time thinking that the Rangers could – make that as competitive. And I'm looking at Carolina as a team that, again, they can't win on the road right now, so I can't even confidently say much about them either, because I thought that they would have at least been able to take one game on the road by now in the playoffs. But so that's a concern for them. If they can't win in Tampa, there's no way they're not going to win the series, that series. But I'm looking at that as Carolina is a team that if they can put everything together, I think they genuinely have a chance of winning the whole thing. So either way, though, whatever team Tampa faces is going to struggle against them regardless. That's just – Tampa is just looking really, really good right now.
Yeah, and then the question for Carolina is sort of the opposite of it is for the Rangers. Are they going to get the goaltending? Who's going to be in goal? Is it going to be Freddie Anderson? Is it going to be Antti Raanta? So, I mean, they had their third goalie that played in Chicago for their farm team most of the year. So you don't know what you're going to get out of the Carolina net. They weren't – other than a couple of games in the Bruins series, they weren't very effective, especially the ones here in Boston. The Bruins pretty much owned the Carolina net. So they might have the defense to cover for it. Guys like Slavin and Pesci on the back end. But, I mean, if Tampa's putting routinely three or four past your goalie and you're facing Vasilevsky on the other end, that's going to be a real quick series.
Yeah. No, definitely a good point for sure. And, I mean, this – anything can happen, and that's the beauty of the NHL playoffs. Is, you know, it's really a fight to the finish every year. And then that's the great thing about it. You don't know who's going to show up when, and that's why it's so hard to kind of predict who's going to come out where. But realistically, kind of based on all the teams in, I mean, the Avs look good right now too. I mean, who do you think realistically, based on what you've seen so far from the playoffs, is your pick to win the Stanley Cup this year?
It's Colorado.
You think so? Because I'm kind of – they look really, really good.
Yeah. They have everything that you could ever want in a playoff team. They've got skill. They've got bite. They've got great defensemen. They've got good, not great, but good enough goaltending in Kemper. And they've got a good coach behind the bench. So – It's going to be really hard. It's really hard for me to pick against them. Tampa's got the pedigree. They're probably going to be the team that comes out of the East.
Yeah.
But that'd be a
crazy series, though. That'd be a crazy series.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking forward to watching it. I hope that that's what ends up happening. But if it's not Colorado, I like Edmonton to come out of the Battle of Alberta series, because
that series is interesting as well.
They're showing me something that I don't know that I knew they had, because we all knew that they had the skill between guys like McDavid and Draisaitl. And then you've got a guy like Evander Kane, who personal issues aside, is one of the best scorers remaining in the playoffs. And he's a guy that's going to add that bite to your team. So they've got the, and then of course the question, and Mike Smith is capable, much more capable of playing better than he has so far over the course of the playoffs. He's much better than Mikko Koskinen, who's his backup. So,
No, that's true.
Edmonton, Colorado in the West Final, that's going to be must see TV
Oh,
because
it's
you've
gonna be
got
fantastic.
skill.
Fantastic.
You've got skill. You've got you're. I mean, you're looking at games that are probably going to end up 6-5 every night, and I'm not talking like the 9-6 that we saw in Game One of Edmonton Calgary because that was an anomaly. So you're not going to see Jacob
That
Markstrom
was
going six.
insane. That was a crazy game for anybody
Yeah,
who
every
was
time
not
I look
watching
up from my
that.
phone, I'm like, oh my God, someone else scored.
I was
But
watching. I didn't catch the whole thing, but I caught a good portion of that game, and I was like, wow, this is just like a scoring party. Like, this is crazy right now.
yeah, absolutely, yeah. That was nuts. But
Was.
Edmonton can push Colorado. They don't have the defense to keep up with them, so that's why I lean Colorado in that series. But if that were to happen, Calgary and Colorado would be interesting because Calgary is good enough defensively and in net to where they could probably hold the Avs at bay. But so it's interesting, and it probably would go the same length in terms of series length. Probably either way, it would just be very much less aesthetically pleasing than an Edmonton Colorado series would be. But I genuinely think that Edmonton is going to beat Calgary in that series, because
I think so too.
they're showing me a lot more than I thought they had in the regular season. They're showing that sort of toughness, and they're getting better goaltending over the last couple of games. So I think it's going to be enough to get them through the next round.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. I mean, I think in terms of just hockey fans and what people need, I would say it's that Edmonton Avs series, because I think that
Yeah.
would be just probably the best series we've seen of the playoffs. I think it's I'm looking at that series as what's probably going to end up being the most exciting series that we're going to watch, to be honest. And that would just be so competitive and just so exciting to see that go
Well,
down.
and especially, I mean, I hesitate to say this sort of word, but do you think, like, maybe since we think that Tampa's coming out of the East, do you think that series is maybe anticlimactic? That series in the East could very well be anticlimactic. I mean, we both think that whoever they face, whether it's Carolina or the Rangers, Tampa's gonna.
That's an interesting word for sure. That's a hard question to answer. I hate saying anticlimactic when it comes to playoffs in general, just because you really
Yeah.
never know. But
Yeah, we're not talking about the NBA playoffs here, right? So.
I do think though that that series would become significantly less interesting, I will say, if we get this other matchup that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like if we get Oilers abs, I think that the other series would be significantly less interesting than that, I will say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like regardless of what that matchup ends up being.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So
I
that's
mean,
that that's so I guess in a way I kind of agree with you with the anticlimactic.
I
That's
think, I mean,
an interesting
as
word
much
to
as I
use.
as much as I don't like saying that because it's the part of the Stanley Cup playoffs after all, like
Yeah.
you look at a team that's won two straight cups, just steamrolled their rival in the second round, and they're facing a team that's not as good, at using air quotes, on paper in the East Finals. Yeah, it certainly could be anticlimactic. I as well as you are hoping that that's not the case, but I could foresee like that being like a 3-1 series at some point, and maybe it
Yeah.
goes six, but it's
People
certainly
are
not
like,
going seven.
people are like, it's whatever at this point. Yeah, I see what you mean. Like if Tampa goes up 3-1, for example, then it's like, oh, okay, well, they're probably gonna win the series anyway, so who cares?
Shut out the lights, party's over if it's 3-1 Tampa in that series.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, definitely. That's an interesting way to put it, but I definitely, I guess, sort of agree with you. But either way, I think, again, it's the playoffs. Anything can happen. So it's just going to be super exciting to kind of see what happens from here in general, because these teams are, obviously, like you said at the beginning of the show, they're all really, really good. They all earn their spot here, and it's just so intense, and it's going to be so just exciting to kind of see how the rest of it plays out.
And honestly, I think you probably summed it up perfectly with just using that one word. When if someone is a hockey fan, a brand new hockey fan that comes up to you or I and wants to know what's it like watching the Stanley Cup playoffs, what's one word to describe the Stanley Cup playoffs and the hockey experience between April and June in general? And you said the perfect
Complete.
word. It is intense.
It is. No, it really is intense. It's so intense. I can't really think of a better word than that,
Captivating, intense. I mean, your eyes are just glued to the television at all times. Because
You can't
you
miss
blink.
anything.
I mean, look at the. I mean, we were just talk got through finishing talking about the Edmonton Calgary game one. You look up, and there have been three other goals scored. I went out for a 15-minute drive during the course of that game.
Because it
I
was so much just constant scoring.
was listening to the call to the car to the call on XM, parked my car, turned it off, walked inside, two goals were scored. In the time that
Was so
I
good.
got out of my car, walked into my garage, and walked in the house, turned the game back on, two goals were scored.
It was so crazy. I was like, what am I watching right now? I
Yeah,
was like, this
this isn't
cannot be
hockey. I
real
don't
right
know
now.
what this is.
I was like, well, welcome to the Stanley Cup playoffs, everybody.
Yeah, you never know what you're gonna get. Life's like a box of chocolate.
Really? So true. What did you think of the Bruins, though? Because, obviously there's a lot of disappointed people now, not really knowing the future of this team, people like Bergeron, and just the fact that people had a lot of high hopes for them this year, hoping that they would kind of go deeper, especially because of the idea of, that window possibly being closed and them having to do a rebuild and all of that, the speculation. What are your thoughts on the Bruins now going into the off season? Do you think that they really are in the rebuild? Do you think that that window is closed? I mean, there is I do think some of that is dependent on what happens with Bergeron.
Yeah, most if not all of it, I would say is probably dependent on that. If he doesn't come back, then you've got to go work a trade for somebody else. You look at a guy maybe like Mark Scheifele or Pierre-Luc Dubois from Winnipeg, they might want out. So that's certainly an avenue that you would explore down the line. I'd still like to look at, I mean, if I were them, I'd maybe look at that anyway. But it's all about a character fit in the end. And I think both of those guys would be perfectly fine in the Bruins room. But you talk about this season as its own entity, and you look at a team like the Bruins, it's tough because I thought the goaltending was great over the course of the year. I mean, you're getting a guy that's a rookie in Jeremy Swayman, a guy coming from a horrible situation in Buffalo, and Linus Ullmark, where he didn't have great numbers, but when you look at the underlying stats, he was really great, I would say, for the amount of crap that he had to deal with in Buffalo in front of him. In the locker room, you name it. So credit to him for what he went through and posting the numbers that he did. And it showed in Boston, and he's going to be a great backup for Swayman going forward because I expect a guy like Sway to get probably 55 to 58 games next year.
Which he should.
The acquisition of Lindholm at the deadline was great. I think that's perfect for the Bruins back end. And now you've probably got an overload on the left side now. So what do you do with some of those guys? You re-signed Zboril right as the season ended. He's coming off knee surgery. You've got a guy that I saw a ton of this year in Jack Eichon that looks like Torey Krug light. It really impressed me with some of his quarterbacking on the power play for the Providence Bruins over the course of the year. And then you've got guys that are a lot of prove it guys like Jack Studnicka. You've got Mark McLaughlin that's going to probably play a part on both Providence and Boston next year. You've still got Chris Wagner for one more year. You've got a lot of fringe guys between the two clubs that I'm interested to see what happens with in the offseason, because you said it at the beginning, this is make it or break it time. If Bergeron comes back, you need to go all in again. But if he doesn't, I think it's going to be interesting. I think that's actually the word for it, is interesting, because there are so many avenues in which you can take this down. The fans aren't going to want it, but I think they're sort of bracing themselves for a rebuild in a way, because when you think about it, Brad Marchand is probably going to become captain. He's 34 years old. You've got two locked in first pair defenders and Hampus Lindholm and Charlie McAvoy that'll be back. You've probably got Brandon Carlo, that's a right shot second pair D that'll be around for a little bit as well. And then really, what else do you have? You have Taylor Hall, you've got Craig Smith for one more year, you've got Holla for one more year. And then the Pastrnak question as well, because he has one more year on his deal at a bargain at 6.7 per year. And he's going to command probably 11.5 million at least on his next contract. So what do you do? If you're a rebuilding team, you might want to explore dealing him.
Yeah, which people are not going to want to hear that though. That's the whole
No.
thing too, is the fans are not going to like that. But realistically, it might not make sense to bring him back if they're really committing to the rebuild. But again, that's the question. Are
When
they
you
doing
think
that?
about a team like Boston that doesn't really have the draft capital right now and might not have the top prospects, and there are some good ones coming, but it's tough. I don't envy the position that Don Sweeney's in.
Gosh, no, I definitely don't either.
But like, fans might not want to hear the term rebuild, but life's not fair. And I think that's something, that's a concept that a lot of sports fans need to hear, is that life's not fair, and nothing's ever going to work out the way you want it to for your team every single time you want it to.
Exactly. And it's part
So
of sports, you know?
it's
That's
part of
just it's
sports.
just part of it.
Yeah,
It
I mean,
comes with the
it's
process.
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it.
I mean, I think honestly, in this specific situation though, people are looking at, 2019 and
Yeah,
seasons
that was
like
definitely a
that,
missed
and just
opportunity.
how disappointing that situation was, with people really thinking that that Bruins team could go all the way, which, we all did. I thought that, and it's they them coming so close that year. With that, probably was the year for them to win it all. And I think at that point, how they won it all then, people would be more accepting of now, like, okay, we're in a rebuild. And now it's like, okay, here we go again now. And yet again, the Bruins fell short, the last couple of years. And it's like, okay, now we have to just kind of restart. So, I mean, I definitely get where the frustration is coming from that standpoint. But at the same time, it's like we all knew that this was going to be coming. We all knew that Bergeron's retirement was lurking. You know what I mean? It was kind of lurking in the distance a little bit the last few years, and now it's here. And it's like, okay, it's time for him to make a decision. You look at Marshawn, like you mentioned, and then you look at players like Pasta, and it's like, yeah, people are not going to want to get rid of somebody like him. But if you're really committing to a rebuild, sometimes you it makes sense to just look at options to deal somebody like that and see what the return is that you could get on that person. Because are you really committing to a rebuild if you're going to re-sign someone like that? It's tough. It's really, really tough.
I wouldn't want to be a GM, that's for
Oh, I
sure.
wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. They get so much crap from, I feel like, just from people in general, but it's a tough job.
Then okay, but if you do get rid of a guy like Pastrnak, then what's the next? Because you have to have a plan
Yeah, you do.
going forward, even if it doesn't look great for a few years. You look at a guy like Steve Yzerman in Detroit, where it doesn't look great, and then you have a couple of players that pop this year, and Zadina and Seider and Raymond. You've got a goaltender prospect coming, so there things are starting to so the gears are starting to turn in Detroit. if you're the Bruins, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think that they're going to rebuild at all. I think even if a guy like Bergeron were to retire, they're going to try to piece together as big a contender as they can without a guy that is going, his number is going to be in the rafters someday. You need somebody that you're going to look to a guy like Marchand, and you're going to be like, who do you want? We're going to try to go get him with whatever we have. But the problem is the Bruins don't the Bruins might have to give up another asset to get an asset going forward. So it's a slippery slope. I don't envy the situation that Don Sweeney is in. But this is going to be the most interesting offseason for the Bruins, and probably important offseason for the Bruins in a very long time, because this either keeps the dream of winning a cup alive this offseason, or it starts setting in motion the rebuild to where you might not see the Bruins either back in the playoffs or back in cup contention for upwards of 6, 7 years.
Yeah, and that's the part that people are, that's going to be a tough pill to swallow for some people, I think, or probably a lot of people for that matter. But we knew that we were going to approach this situation. We knew we were getting to that time of the talk of, how closed is that window really for a championship? Are they going to try to strive for that still, or are they not going to do that? And this offseason, like you said, is going to determine all of that. We're going to know going into next season what direction this team is trying to go in, and whether that means they're trying to formulate and put together a team that does or doesn't include Bergeron, that's going to go for a cup. We'll know that. If they are not doing that, we'll also know that as well. And we'll understand the expectations that we should have going into the season in terms of what this team is going to look like based on how this offseason goes. And okay, are we realistically hoping that this is going to be a playoff team that has a real chance of winning it all? Or are we going into the season with the expectation of, yeah, they're not going to be a playoff team, but we just want to see how these guys mesh and what happens this year,
Yeah, I think that's, if it ends up looking like that, then I think that's what you do look for. And you play a guy like Jack Stadnica, 60 plus games. You play a guy like Fabian Lysell, who's coming up through the ranks, was outstanding this year in the WHL with Vancouver. And selfishly, I want to see him in Providence next year. But if I don't, and I get to watch him in Boston, then that's awesome too. And we get to see a lightning fast skater that has insane skill like him, in a Bruins uniform, which would be great. And so eventually you just got to let the kids play. And so we're going to find out sooner or later. We're going to have to find out.
Yeah, no, we all are gonna, and like you said, being Don Sweeney right now is not a fun job to have. There's a lot of decisions to be had on his part. I mean, even obviously the DeBrusk situation was really, really kind of sensitive this year for a lot of people. Obviously, earlier on in the season, him requesting that trade, then he really, really started to contribute and play really, really well, and was becoming a key part of this team. Do you think that that option is still on the table of trying to deal him, or do you think that he's here to stay now based on his performance in that later half of the season?
That's all up to him at the end of the day. Do I want to
Yes,
see him
huh.
back? Yes. Do I think it's still on the table? Probably. But I think, to be honest, a lot of it was him just needing to voice those frustrations. And I think a lot of the reasoning why he played so well and so free at the end of the year, and ended up scoring 25 goals, was the fact that he got that off his chest, and that had probably been weighing on him for years. So the fact that he was able to get that out in the open and not, and you wonder about his teammates reacting to something like that. And the Bruins have such a strong room that they were going to embrace him no matter what. And they recognized his frustrations, and they kept him integrated into the team setup. And he thrived in it. And you saw what happened in that. And he just played so free over the last few months of the season, that it would be a shame to see him go. Reiterating myself again, do I think It's still on the table. Yes. Do I think he's going to go anywhere? No.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's definitely an interesting way to look at it. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of possibilities out there, a lot of talk about what he might do, what he might not do. But I do think once he started to find his stride this season, I think that gave him a lot of confidence to the point where maybe he's, you know, maybe he's going to stay. And I think ultimately that's another situation that's going to be an interesting thing to watch out for in this offseason and see if he voices anything else, if he comes out with anything, or if he feels like he's content here now.
Yeah, there's just so many storylines going forward when it comes to the Bruins over the course of the offseason. You've got the Bergeron stuff. You've got what they're going to do with the depth and defense. You've got DeBrusk, and you've got Pastrnak. So, man, there's no lack of headlines coming forward when it comes to the Bruins, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's why, like we said before, there's so many question marks regarding what they're really going to do. But this team potentially could look really similar going into this upcoming season, or it could look significantly different, which is weird to think about. But that's how we know what direction they're trying to go in.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but, you know, either way, we have to just trust the process, trust what happens. Again, Don Sweeney's job is not an easy one, but we'll kind of see what he decides to do, what kind of emerges here in the offseason, and just kind of see what we're looking at come, you know, next season.
Come September, we'll know a lot more about this team than we do currently in May. And so in whatever it is, 4 short months, we'll have a pretty good idea of what this team's capable of during the course of the season.
Yep. So true. That's definitely a great way to say it. I do have one important question for you, though, before we close out. So you did say you went to Marquette. So are you primarily a Marquette fan or a Providence College fan?
Cut me open, and I believe black and white. Always has been that way. Always will be that way. I went to Providence games starting when I was 3 or 4 years old. So when Marquette plays Providence twice a year, it's PC. Every other game, it's Marquette. So
I was curious.
The quickest and easiest answer is, like, I tell that to everybody too. It's like I was at most of the Providence games at home this year, over the past few years, working there on press row. And a lot of people would come up and ask that question. Hey, like, you went to Marquette, right? Who are you rooting for, Marquette or Providence? I'm like, I love my alma mater. I love Marquette to death. But if they play Providence, I want Providence to kick their ass every single time.
Okay. Yeah, I was curious. I had to ask that question, you know, because it's definitely an interesting one. I mean, as I told your dad as well, I am a big UConn fan. So,
God, why did we do this podcast? Oh, God, get out of here.
That's why I saved it for the end. What do you mean?
Yeah. All right. Okay. I respect it. I respect that.
So you couldn't just hop out at the beginning when you found out that I was a UConn fan.
You know, it's funny you say that, though. So before March, I don't think I had met a nice UConn fan in my entire life. And now I've met two, because I went to Milwaukee for the NCAAs. In March and watched Providence play South Dakota State at a bar, a guy came into the bar wearing UConn stuff, and he came up to the bar and saw Providence stuff, and he's like, I just want to congratulate you guys on a great year. I know that you probably think of a UConn fan and want to hate his guts, but I just wanted to say that you guys were on a great year, and I'm rooting for you guys going forward, rooting for the Bees. So I was like, you know, that is just that is so refreshing. And he was showing me pictures about all the he had all Friar stuff in his basement because he had a relative that went to Providence. And it was so now I can honestly say that I've met two nice UConn fans. So I am greatly appreciative for that. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. Definitely appreciate the compliment. But yeah, I love college basketball. It's awesome, and the Big East is the best. There's nothing
college
really like Big East
my
basketball.
Favorite too, so I love it.
Yeah, but I really appreciate you coming on the show with me. This was great. Just you know, before we kind of sign off here, just let everyone know where they can find you on social media, what your handles are, everything like that.
Yeah, so Twitter and Instagram, they are both at Rook Voice.
That's easy to remember.
Yeah, it's not case sensitive or anything like that, but it's at Rook Voice on both Twitter and Instagram. So go and hit me up there. I answer a lot of DMs, whether they're nice or not. So I look forward to hearing from some of you guys.
That's admirable. That
Yeah.
really is admirable. Twitter can
Gotta
be a tough
engage with
place.
fans.
But yeah, you guys heard it here first. Definitely go follow him. Really appreciate you hopping on here with me. Always appreciate everyone tuning into the show every week. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your week, and I will talk to you all soon. Have a great night, everybody.